Chapter 9. Orange, New Jersey, June 1923. It was the roaring 20s in Orange, too, but Grace Fryer wasn't in the mood for dancing. It was odd. She had this slight pain in her back and feet, nothing major, but enough to make it uncomfortable for her to walk. Dancing definitely wasn't on the agenda, even though the girls at the bank were still throwing their parties. She tried to put it to the back of her mind. She'd had a few aches and pains the year before, too, but they came and went. Hopefully, when these latest aches cleared up, they would simply go for good. She was just run down, she reasoned. I thought that this was merely a touch of rheumatism and did nothing about it. Grace had far more important things to think about than an achy foot. She'd been promoted at work and was now the head of her department. It wasn't just an achy foot troubling her, however. Back in January, Grace had gone to the dentist for a routine checkup. He'd removed two teeth and, although an infection had lingered for 2 weeks, her trouble had then cleared up. But now, 6 months on, a hole had appeared at the site of the extraction and was leaking pus profusely. It was painful and smelly and tasted disgusting. Grace had health insurance and was prepared to pay to get it sorted. The doctors, she was sure, would be able to fix her trouble. But had she known what was happening just a few miles away in Newark, she might have had reason to doubt her faith in physicians. Grace's former colleague Irene Rudolph was still paying doctor after doctor to treat her, but without relief. She had by now undergone both operations and blood transfusions, but to no avail. The decay in Irene's jaw was eating her alive, bit by bit. She could feel herself weakening. Her pulse would pound in her ears as her heart beat faster to try to get more oxygen around her severely anemic body. But although her heart was drumming faster and faster, it felt to her like her life was inexorably slowing down. In Orange, for Helen Quinlan, the drumbeat suddenly stopped. She died on 3rd of June, 1923, at her home on North Jefferson Street. Her mother Nellie was with her. Helen was 22 years old at the time of her death. The cause of it, according to her death certificate, was Vincent's angina. This is a bacterial disease, a progressive, painful infection with ulceration, swelling and sloughing off of dead tissue from the mouth and throat due to the spread of infection from the gums. A doctor later said he didn't know if the disease was confirmed by laboratory tests, but it was written on her death certificate, nonetheless. The angina in its name is derived from the Latin angere, meaning to choke or throttle. That's what it felt like when the decay in her mouth finally reached her throat. That's how Helen died, this girl who had used to run with the wind in her skirts, making boyfriends gaze and marvel at her zest for life and her freedom. She had lived an impossibly short life, touching the lives of those who knew her. Now, suddenly, she was gone. 6 weeks later, Irene Rudolph followed her to the grave. She died on 15th of July, 1923, at 12 noon, in Newark General Hospital, where she'd been admitted the day before. She was 21. At the time of her death, the necrosis in her jaw was said to be complete. Her death was attributed to her work, but the cause was given as phosphorus poisoning, a diagnosis admitted by the attending physician to be not decisive. Catherine Sharp, who had watched her cousin suffer through every stage of what she called her terrible and mysterious illness, was angry and confused, as well as grief-stricken. She knew Irene had spoken to Dr. Allen about her fears that her sickness had been caused by her job, but since then the family had heard nothing. They didn't know the names John Roach or Dr. Zamatolsky. They knew nothing of the doctor's verdict following his tests. In fact, After reviewing Zamatolsky's report and that of the two inspectors, the Department of Labour took no action. No action whatsoever.